Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The changing of seasons can affect how you feel. 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Ride with John Pollock and Waiting. The A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Ride for Monday night. Download it Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Ride for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade Take the Mic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewind to Raw with John Pollock and the one and only Wei Ting, who is here with us tonight. How are you, Wei?
I'm not bad, John. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing well.
All right. Always happy to hear that.
Yes. Likewise. Yeah.
If you didn't say it, I would feel compelled to ask you what was wrong.
Okay. Well, nothing is wrong. I was had a very productive day, and I did get to see you, among others, last night as well. A rare hangout for John Pollock and Wei Ting. We do not see each other too often when it's not through our computer screens, but it was nice to see you in living color last night.
We basically only see each other in person if somebody comes in from out of town, and that was the case yesterday with Benno.
Benno was in town. In fact, yes. He was imported for the second time this year. I mean, we got to see plenty of Benno this year.
I feel like I see Benno more than I see many of my like local friends, actually.
Well, I mean, if they can't keep up, about me, we move on. Yes, we made our way. There was a wrestling connection to this. There was a wrestling show at the Blood Brothers Brewery. This was the Northern Crown Group. You and I did not make it out to the wrestling show because we are elitist, but we did make it out after the fact. And
no, it's because we have very young children. That's the reason.
That is true. And a 5 p.m. start time is that one was not happening for me. But yes, we did make our way out there. Had a very
sounded like quite the show, a very important show. I kind of wish I went to some newsworthy items.
Yeah, we're going to get into some of it in the news as well. Yes, the Zoe Sagar being announced as the first Canadian to get ID'd. How do you like this terminology, getting ID'd?
It's fine. What would be better?
You've signed a WWE ID deal.
That's not as catchy. You've been legal.
ID'd.
Yeah, you've been TKO'd. You know, like maybe they can come up with something like that.
Okay, TKO'd. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's got a nice ring to it. Yes, it was. Did you drove yesterday, correct?
Yes, I did.
Man, I rode my bike to this place, and it was so nice out last night. Like it was not November weather in Toronto last night, but coming home, dude, was it all of a sudden very cold, extremely cold. It started raining on me.
November rain.
Yeah, you actually left before the most amusing part of the night. We were standing at the corner. And you had just left to go drive home, and they're waiting for their Uber, and I'm next to the bike rack, and all of a sudden we hear this big crash, and we turn around, and
what?
We hear this woman that is like buried underneath her bike that has somehow fallen over. This man is next to her, is like, "Are you okay?" And he goes and was proceeding to help her, and I'm looking closer. I was like, she fell with her bike coming down on her, and then she took my bike down on her landing. So my bike is just like destroyed here on the, not literally destroyed, but it's down. And I'm just waiting here. It's like, okay, this is a little unfortunate. She gets up, and then I proceed to watch her try, I want to say like 3 times, to get my bike up, and she's just lifting it and it crashes. Lifting it and it crashes. I was like, okay, you know what? Let's just call it a day.
Did you help?
No, I didn't. Because at this point, I was like, I've already, it's been a minute here. I feel weird interjecting, saying, by the way, that's my bike. Why don't you just, I don't think this woman was, I don't want to make assumptions, but she did not seem to be, she was probably leaving the bar. That was my thought on this. And it took her about 10 minutes to
Wait a second. You just stood there as you were inconvenienced for the 10 minutes? Rather than like just grab the bike yourself?
Well, she was still trying to get her bike out, so it wasn't like I had a clear path to get my bike out. I had to like untangle it from this mess she had created.
I see. Okay. So your bike was inconvenienced, but you were the most inconvenienced, I guess.
I mean, I was more just amused at watching this happen, and then she finally made her way out. I was like, I don't think you should be probably riding a bike. That was my conclusion on her state, but I could have been mistaken.
Maybe a tricycle for her.
Maybe an Uber. But my bike was fine. I can report back, but it was very cold though, on the way.
I'm sorry I missed all that.
You left 5 minutes too early.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately. All right. Well, speaking of crashing, Mike Tyson and Jake Paul were on Netflix on Friday night, and you are my barometer for when a fight really does cross over into the mainstream, and you had to do the SmackDown show on Friday evening. Did you even bother to attempt to watch any of this production on Friday night? And did you have any interest in the day of like when this ramped up and this was starting to get a lot of attention in the final couple of days?
Not in the lead up to the final couple of days, but I would say like in the hours leading up to it, I would say the answer was yes. Yeah. It even surprised me. I didn't really have any intention of like making it a part of my evening, but I think I had heard so many people talk about it. Several people, even in our chat room during Rewind a SmackDown, that I was like, okay, well, I have access to Netflix, as I'm sure most people are figuring, you know, like I got access to this. I just hit a button and I can watch this thing. It's Mike Tyson. It's Jake Paul. So I did make an attempt, and attempt I did, and that was pretty much all I did that evening.
Yeah, I mean, the last couple of days, it really ramped up, and I was definitely curious to see it for several reasons. The actual fight, I'm not going to lie, like I was interested to see this fight. I did not have any expectations for it, but I was also interested to see just a Netflix-produced boxing card. I think that was, to me, the most interesting part of this whole spectacle and how well they promoted it, and that Mike Tyson is one of these figures that if this guy is fighting, no matter what his age is, even if it's at 58, there is going to be a novelty to that. And I mean, I agreed with Dana White that this guy was the A++ side of this equation. He had like a opponent that people are interested in, but this was the Mike Tyson show. So I was at the Raptors game on Friday night, and the moment I realized that this could be big was when I'm somehow over time. It used to always be at sporting events, like the women's washroom would have the longest lines, and being a man, you could just walk in and out. It was somehow over the last couple of years, like the male lines are now just as long, if not longer, than the women's lines. I don't know what's happened, but I was in this lineup all the way out into the concourse area, and dude in front of me is streaming the fights on his phone as he waits in the bathroom. And this is the undercard. Like, we're not even at the Amanda Serrano, Katie Taylor fight. So at that point it was like, okay, this one might be big. And when I got home, I was planning to watch like the last two fights, and this was a ungodly painful experience that I was determined to get this stream going. And it was like, it must have crashed on me minimum 20 times between multiple devices. I had neighbors that I actually talked to the next day. They got a separate Netflix account to try and get access to it. Like, they got a second Netflix account because they thought it was an issue with their account. I mean, it was just such a pain. I got in once and then it crashed. It was like pixelated and crashing. Then I re-logged in and it took me to where I had left off. But now I'm like 15 minutes behind, and I just try to get to the live stream. Big mistake, because this was what I got if I tried to fast forward, and it would just spin for about 3 minutes and then crash again. This was on my phone. This was on my laptop. This was on my TV. It finally stayed steady for the last couple of rounds of the Tyson-Paul fight. So I got to see the last couple of rounds uninterrupted. But yeah, it was a total chore, and I was definitely not alone. I did hear from others that did not have this issue, but the figures that we got, and these figures, let's remember, are from Netflix and Most Valuable Promotions. So you have to take that and understand the source here. But they are touting the fact that it peaked in the main event with 65 million concurrent streams. Now, part of me thinks, okay, like households, like that could be a number of people per household. However, like myself, I bet you I was responsible for like 3 streams. And how many people were like me that were trying to get in on these multiple devices as well? Suffice to say, though, this was an enormous audience that they had. This would not surprise me if this number of people ends up being well over 100 million people watching this. And, you know, it was just such a high volume, but I think it's also the realities of even the biggest, most successful streamer on earth. When there's such a high volume, it's still not a seamless experience for the user. And a lot of people now focusing on the NFL games on Christmas Day. I don't look at this as a big issue to be concerned if you're strictly a WWE fan. There's going to be no episode of Raw that's anywhere in this ballpark. I don't think a WrestleMania would approach this level of volume for a viewing. And that's not going to be the case for Americans next year, which is a huge percentage of it. But yeah, this was, I think it was more so the story was the streaming and getting that under control. Because if you're the UFC and or any of these other major sports leagues, I mean, that's the, like, streaming is, it's got all this power and where things are going. But man, you want to be able to at least tell your audience that you stay home on a Friday night, the least we can expect. If you're going to give us your time, we will give you a reliable stream. And this was a massive struggle for myself.
Yeah. I even though I don't think a WrestleMania will reach this level, the question still remains, what is the threshold for triggering an issue like this? And is a WrestleMania or a football game?
You know, Mike Tyson, Love is Blind reunion, Tom Brady roast, nothing. Like, there were no big problems for that. I understand that's a much smaller scale. And Joey Chestnut and Kobayashi's hot dog eating contest.
No
seamless
issue.
Seamless. Yeah. So somewhere in that chasm is the sweet spot.
Well, I mean, the Love is Blind reunion special, that was, we give them a pass for that one because that was one of their earlier attempts at live streaming. This one, this Tyson Paul fight, was something that they were probably very, very prepared for. And even in that preparation, it resulted in something like this. So you could bet that they're probably investing even more resources into making sure these football games during Christmas are seamless. And beyond that, any of these other attempts that they're trying, Beyonce announcing a halftime show on Netflix, that's going
which
to be
is probably
going to
be the most watched portion of either of those. Like, you got the Chiefs playing the Steelers, and then yeah, Beyonce's playing at the Ravens Texans game. Like, that's going to be, it's not, I don't think you're going to have the worldwide appeal of this boxing fight, but especially in the U.S. and North America, like, these Christmas Day games are going to be, they're going to be gigantic.
Massive, yeah, yeah. So, but, you know, but by the time it gets to wrestling, I have to hope that these issues will be sorted out, like, to the level where it would be able to handle a WWE audience even at its peak. In other ways, though,
you imagine wrestling fans having their January 6th disaster.
Oh my. In other ways, though, this sort of thing is actually, like, kind of good publicity for Netflix. It's certainly for this Paul and Tyson fight. You know, it's able to market, hey, look what we did. We crashed Netflix. Like, you know, that sort of thing, it could be to, I think, the benefit of, like, future promotions if they wanted to.
There was one illegal stream that had over, like, 6 million viewers at one point. I mean, it was like the amount of people that watch this, and we don't know what the number is like that watch. I'm sure it would have been a healthy amount that were watching this the next day anyway. But when you take into account all the streaming problems of people that went back, I didn't hear any problems coming back the next day.
I watched it right afterwards. It was perfect.
Yeah. There are so many people like that that would have watched this weekend that I'm sure the tally, this to me would be one of those exceptions that Netflix does tout the actual numbers, because I'm sure they are incredible. And this is all geared towards like their ad tier and showing advertisers that, listen, we can have a captive audience in potentially in excess of 100 million people for the right event that hits on a worldwide level. And that's
not only the ad tier, but the advertising that appears in the broadcast as well.
Yeah, there was a little bit of it from Jake Paul being smothered with his body spray by brother Logan Paul. Did you have any thought just on the fight itself? Like, this is your Venn diagram of entertainment and combat sports come together.
I have no real thoughts on the action itself. I don't feel at all qualified to talk about the in-ring content, nor do I feel 99% of the people who decided to comment on the boxing in this fight, I don't think that they have the authority either. I've seen so much stupidity coming out of this, like accusing Tyson of throwing the fight, and it happens every time you like, especially with boxing where like action might not always be so constant. But how the fuck do you expect somebody to react when they're 58? They haven't fought in decades, and they're like. Like, you have to understand, when you're boxing somebody, you can get knocked out at any second. So a bit of like, you know, shyness is completely understandable. I saw this most ridiculous, like, my brother sent me this TikTok of this guy trying to like draw these diagrams, looking like freeze framing, saying how like, look, in this instance, Mike Tyson had a clear shot and he decided not to take it. Like, that type of like stupid.
It's almost like this guy had 8 blood transfusions a few months ago and nearly died.
So that came out afterwards. What exactly,
So the next morning, like, we all know of like the medical issue that Mike Tyson had that was, you know, it was somewhat, you know, sanitized, I would state, of what got out in the summer, that this was an issue with an ulcer. And we got a bit more clarity in the countdown special that this was something that, you know, Tyson at least had concerns about, like whether he might die when he was, you know, taken to the hospital. So the day after the fight, he puts out this statement about, this is one of those situations when you lost but still won. I'm grateful for last night. No regrets to get in the ring one last time, which right alone, like, that kind of goes against what he had stated in the immediate aftermath in the ring with Ariel Helwani, of like, he's shooting his angle to do another fight with like Logan Paul, or he seemed very open to doing another fight. And we fast forward to Saturday, and this seemed like a more kind of I'm done. But yeah, revealing that he needed 8 blood transfusions and lost like a huge amount of weight in this whole thing.
25
and
pounds. Yeah.
And you read that, it was like, of course, this fight took place in Texas, but there is real questions that should absolutely be asked about what even – and I understand that Texas is generally a punchline in combat sports, but the purpose of a commission, if it has even the slightest concern about a fighter's health and safety, that was my biggest concern on Friday, was just that I do not – if there is a knockout, if there is an embarrassing performance, if it's a bad fight, I just do not want to see like something horrible occur that would have been a real black eye of, you know, and this guy was pretty much in no shape to be competing, and to go 8 rounds at a truncated number of minutes per round. I mean, that was... I mean, it was somewhat miraculous this guy got through that, but it is not something I don't think too many people want to see again. That said, if he fought again in a year, there would be ample interest a year from now for Mike Tyson to fight again. Nobody is like, this guy has not been an elite fighter in over 2 decades, but it's a power of nostalgia and a highlight reel that is second to none, that people will take themselves back. And for one night, it's 1987 and they're on the boardwalk in Atlantic City watching this guy.
If you could sell the story, if the persona still play the part, at least outside of the ring, I mean, you'll still have plenty of people that will be interested. Yeah.
Do you think that the is the criticism, should it be somewhat mitigated when we're talking about something that, like, I would be curious how many people signed up for Netflix specifically for this fight versus a huge percentage that already had Netflix. So it's like, I don't want to call this fight free, but like, I would not have been subscribing to Netflix specifically to watch this. It's because I have Netflix. And I think that went for a lot of people to the success of this fight that, you know, it's, when you spend $60 on a pay-per-view, I'm generally pretty much behind, like, if a fan wants to complain about what they got for their money, I'm pretty like on the side of a fan in that instance. For this one, I just don't know what you went in anticipating that these 16 minutes did not provide you of a 58-year-old against Jake Paul. This was not going to be some marvelous boxing fight. And if you were there for boxing, the fights that preceded it, especially the Amanda Serrano, Katie Taylor fight, like, you got your great boxing fight, and it was minimal buy-in.
I think you pose an interesting question, because I think you could ask that sort of question for a Peacock. You could maybe even ask it for a Max, but like, Netflix is so, like, we all have Netflix already for various reasons, right? It's for many people sort of like the default streaming service that they have. So how would you even go about finding, I guess, like, does that data even come out, like, number of subscribers gained?
I don't think that would necessarily come out unless Netflix volunteered it. I'm sure Netflix, like, they absolutely would have access to signups that day as well. So, I mean, it's interesting. This was all about, you know, Netflix continuing its pathway into live sports, but the events that they feel are going to cross over. And this one definitely did. I mean, this was this was a exaggerated version of what the Tom Brady roast was, that for that night was, and coming out of it was a big talking point. And this was the same.
No, it's for me, it was a bit of a unique experience having it take place on Netflix. I mean, live sports, they're communal experiences, and it was the most communal experience I've ever had while watching a streaming service offering. You know, you often have it just, I think, with hysteria about, like, on-demand series like a Squid Game or something, but never while we're all watching it and commenting on it, you know, the next day. So this kind of changes things, at least for people who just only watch streaming.
And only one person that was able to state that they worked this show in front of what was an announced attendance of over 72,000, $18 million gate, and 1 month prior doing a Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling in Windsor, Ontario, that being Mauro Ranallo.
Oh, don't forget Death Warrior, an appearance there too. He worked Death Warrior.
Man, he did Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling, a Rewind Away cameo, and
the trifecta.
Tyson, all in a month. What a week for Mauro.
My God, wow. He's everywhere.
So there you have it. That was the Jake Paul-Mike Tyson fight. I did write a piece on this on the site if you would like to check it out. And for you Double Double Espresso patrons, you can hear me read my own words. And hey, let's all give it up. I mean, this is really breaking the fourth wall and then some. But folks, have you checked out the new font on the website?
Oh.
I mean, I thought this was, sometimes my computer acts up on me, and I wasn't sure if this was a permanent change or something wrong with my screen. But then Wei confirmed this is our new font, and I was very happy. I like the updated font. I like it a lot, Wei.
It seemed positively reviewed, I guess, by you and by Neil and Andrew, two of the other writers on the site, and that's really all I care about. I mean, I personally, this is just the nerdiest.
Tell us, what did you wake up Saturday morning and say, you know what, today's the day?
I personally feel like a serif font. It looks just slightly more professional than a sans serif font, which is what we've been used to. So I'm looking to try it out and looking to get feedback. I often don't really tell you guys if I'm about to do these sort of changes. I just kind of wait for the feedback to come in, and thank you for giving it to me. Positive.
As long as we don't get like Comic Sans, okay, I would put my foot down at that. Okay. Yeah. I'm very, I've told people before, I have a bit of ADD about like font that I use to type. Like there are moods I am in with fonts that correspond with them. And there are some days that I'll sit and I take like 5 minutes of like, what font? It's like sometimes the font is just like, it's like I need to have the right font for this particular day. It's a very odd idiosyncrasy.
It's not odd at all. I mean, if you've ever read a comic book, I mean, font choice is sometimes like deliberately used to, I don't know, show different types of tone or expression. So,
you know, there's days I'm on a Verdana kick. There are others that I'm a Times New Roman. Sometimes I go Arial. I don't go too wide out of the things, but then I'm playing with font sizes. Some days I'm big font, sometimes small font, bold, non-bold.
That's fascinating. Oh, I didn't know that about you.
I go through phases. Yeah.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah.
And then I just get sick of a font and I'm done. And I move on to another one.
Man, you're okay. That I'm fascinated by that. Actually, I love font talk.
That makes one. Let's stick on Netflix because Raw, debuting January the 6th on the streaming service. And Paul Levesque, who was at UFC 309, the Republican Avengers night out in New York. Paul Levesque was there with Stephanie McMahon on Saturday. And then Sunday, making his way all the way to Las Vegas to appear at a Travis Scott concert to announce that Raw will take place at the Intuit Dome in Inglewood, California. This is the new arena that is going to house the LA Clippers. And Scott is going to appear on that first Raw. And they've also put out a press release promoting John Cena, Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns, CM Punk, and Bianca Belair for the first show. And this was a line that was kind of just a throwaway line in this press release. Many of WWE's top Raw moments will be available to watch on Netflix, plus select programming and historic PLEs also available outside the U.S. beginning January 1st, 2025. So I don't know what you can necessarily read into that, but I'm definitely curious to see what the... This is not going to be the case for Americans that will still be on Peacock, but for those outside, such as Canada and many other territories... Everything migrates to Netflix, including the WWE Network. And what is that library going to look like for us relying on Netflix?
I imagine it simply means we are in the process of uploading everything, maybe migrating everything. And for the launch, you're only going to get a selection of it. The most
yes
important
or no, stuff. Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
That's
Netflix.
A big. You're right. That's a big if. How far do they go? Has Peacock caught up by this point with everything or not?
I mean, I don't have Peacock, so I can't speak specific to the library. But I mean, the network that we have, like it's all up there.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
So watch it while you can, I guess, if you're.
Well, we don't know. I mean, maybe it will just mirror what's there. I can promise you if any of it is not there. I know that the wrestling audience will be very quiet and reserved and are not going to voice their displeasure about stuff that is now no longer part of their library.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there you go. January 6th. Historic Crossover 2 went down on Sunday. Edeon Arena in Osaka welcomed 3,547 fans. The card included Zack Sabre Jr. and Micah defeating El Desperado and Starlight Kid, as well as Mayu Iwatani retaining the IWGP women's title against Momo Watanabe, with the announcement she will defend the belt against Azumi on January 4th at Wrestle Kingdom 19. Also, Great Okan keeping the KOPW championship, beating Suzu Suzuki. And we have a review up on the site for Post Wrestling Cafe members from Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson. And here are some of Karen's overall thoughts on the show and maybe its importance when it comes to New Japan and its promotion of Stardom.
And I wish this wasn't a once in every 2 years kind of thing. Like, I mean, it's more than WWE Revolution or Evolution. I'll give them that much. But it's the New Japan is now responsible for Stardom. Their success is now heavily tied to one another. So it's if you're going to keep having this type of crossover show in the future, I think a lot more consideration and inclusion of who's on the card needs to be given. The showcase matches are great and all, but I think when people see a crossover show, the expectation expects to have more crossover matches and not necessarily like a couple of matches and a couple of Stardom matches, a couple of New Japan matches. And then like, by and large, the majority of the card was crossover proper matches or a like with the women's belt, something that was established at the series, the show itself. It's like, again, I'm not booking New Japan, but I feel like there were gaping holes on wrestlers that are like, LIJ wasn't anywhere to be seen on the show, which is weird for me because, you know, LIJ is arguably the most popular.
Still the draw.
arguably the most popular faction. You have, well, I mean, yes, I know a lot of people have to rest up for World Tag League, but you're not having a G1/5-star Grand Prix match at the show. You're having a fun night at the dojo, like mixing it up, like seeing what sticks. Like that's what the show is meant to be fun.
A night out at the dojo. Maybe that will be the rebranding of this event. But I do understand like the thinking, like this was not when they did the first iteration of this show. That was 2 years ago. And I think it was really intriguing just off the concept. But sometimes when you see the introduction of a concept, you want to build upon that concept. And for this time around, I just didn't. I just felt like this was a show that was buried underneath a sea of shows that are going on and didn't really capture the public's interest. I mean, 3,500 people is not great in Osaka. It's not like it bombed, but it was not like not a healthy number either. And I think that kind of tells you, you know, it's very tough when we're talking about a New Japan and Stardom. It's not like you can really do too many intra-promotional matches unless it's something weird like Great Okan and Suzu Suzuki. But yeah, it was one that I just think it was kind of, it was on people's radar, but I don't know how many were seeking this show out over the weekend and coming up with, you know, unique matchmaking that is going to grab people's interest.
You also talk, I mean, you know, we talk plenty about New Japan being in a rebuilding phase. Stardom is kind of going through that too with, you know, the recent departure of Mauro Goldstar's Julia. I think you can argue Mina Shirakawa is one of the biggest stars that is on the roster right now, and she wasn't a part of this either. So maybe some of that had to do with it.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
The sun's shining, birds are singing, and all feels right in the world.
Until the season changes, and suddenly you lose your motivation to get out of bed. In fact, 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression no matter the season or time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all, because we want you to live your best life and be your best you all year round.
Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we are bringing you two editions of Rewind Away, starting off with a film review of Death Warrior. As described, the 2009 classic features 5 of the best mixed martial arts champions from around the world forced to play a deadly game. Plus, we tackle TNA's Turning Point from 2009. Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord will be covering the historic Crossover 2 event, plus an Ask Away mailbag show, Rewind to SmackDown, and Collision Course. $6 a month gets you access to the Post Wrestling Cafe. Josh Alexander, he was headlining this Northern Crown show on Sunday, and then afterwards announcing that he is ending his indie dates. He has since announced that he's going to be doing 6 more dates, and he put out he addressed the crowd in Toronto and then later posted a statement, and a portion of that statement: regardless of what may or may not be in my future, after talking with my family, I've made the decision to stop taking indie dates. I've loved my time in the indies these past 20 years. I've done amazing things, worked with amazing people. That said, I'm tired of the hustle. It's time for the next crop to step up and fill whatever void I may leave behind in the Canadian scene. I have faith of promotions like Northern Crown in Toronto because of wrestlers like Gabriel Fuerza and Von Vertigo, who he worked on the show Sunday. Please support the indies. Support the wrestlers grinding. They aren't fueled by money, only a rabid passion or addiction and love for pro wrestling. And his final 6 dates, he's doing Calgary, AAW, and Bloodsport this weekend. He's taking on Speedball Mike Bailey, who also looks to be a well, not departing the indie scene, but likely joining AEW. And then he's going to do Barry Wrestling on December 7th and another date, December 12th, that he hasn't announced yet. And his final indie date is listed for January 11th against Kevin Blackwood for Prestige Wrestling in Portland. Earlier this year, I should say, his deal was coming up with TNA, and then they exercised that option, which is believed to be up in February. So naturally, I think people are going to be looking to that time frame and what is going to be in the future for a Josh Alexander. And you would think like both of the major companies in WWE and AEW seem to be in a very aggressive signing mode, and Josh Alexander, like, this would be the time, I think, like, if, and I could imagine him having interest from both sides as well.
I would too. And it's fascinating because I don't know if I would have said the same maybe a year ago, you know, like, but now, I mean, I see somebody like an Ethan Page, for instance. Like, to me, that signing came out of nowhere for NXT. And not just that, but like putting the championship on him, seeing how far they're willing to go with somebody like an Ethan Page. I mean, you know, former tag team partner in Josh Alexander, you can directly see a path for Alexander to reach a prominent level either on NXT or like, look at the Machine Guns. That's another team, you know? Like,
this could maybe be Ciampa's gimmick, is that all these guys from the independents are coming in and they're leapfrogging DIY.
Yeah, that's
Ciampa could get a year out of this,
perhaps.
Oh, not you too.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, he's one of the most talented wrestlers to come out of this country. Makes me really regret not going to the show yesterday.
Yes, I mean, that's 7 p.m. start time. That would have been ideal.
Well, I'm sure he wrestled by that point.
Well, some ratings notes quickly. Both SmackDown and Rampage got hit on Friday night, and neither of them went directly against the Tyson Jake Paul fight. Rampage went against the Serrano Katie Taylor undercard, which they did state. Netflix said over 50 million households watched that fight. So if that number is accurate, like, that's an insane amount of people. I could see this having some impact on these shows just because it was such a kind of cultural event that was going on. But SmackDown fell 20% to 1,234,000 viewers and a 32% drop in the demo to a 0.32, their lowest number since moving to the USA Network. And they were behind the Lakers-Spurs game, and they did beat college football on Fox. So that's the real win for SmackDown on these Friday night battles. And then Rampage, back down this week, a 22% drop in viewership to 186,000 viewers and a 20% drop to a 0.06. Not as low as 2 weeks ago, but the consolation prize is the second lowest numbers in Rampage's history.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't think it was just the Memphis Grizzlies and Golden State Warriors that led to this, but it was, I say this every week, we're not going to get into a thing on Rampage, but doing Ricochet and Dante Martin on Rampage, the fact they're not even promoting like a match like that for Rampage, like, it really is just screaming like lame duck programming for a Rampage. You could argue a match like that just, I mean, granted, it's they're there on the Wednesday. They've still got to fill this taping, but like, a match like this to me makes more sense on a Collision than it does Rampage these days. But anyway,
what do you put on the Rampage though?
Like, I think you could literally throw anything out there. Leo Rush and Commander Part 3.
You might get that next week. Some would argue like a Ricochet Dante Martin isn't that far off from what you just suggested.
Well, maybe not. I mean, that's I was interested to see the match, but only 186,000 were that have Nielsen trending or capabilities. All right, final thing. NXT on Tuesday night, we have more qualifying matches for the Iron Survivor Challenge. Stephanie Vaquer and Jada Parker, as well as Zarya against Ren Sinclair in the women's matches. Eddie Thorpe will face Nathan Frazier in the men's qualifier. Non-title match between Tony D'Angelo and Brooks Jensen. A mixed tag, Ashanti the Adonis and Carmen Petrovic, taking on Brinley Reese and Dion Lennox. I don't know if you're keeping up with the romance involving Ashanti the Adonis and Carmen Petrovic, but this is these are my favorite backstage scenes on a weekly basis. I mean, they are amazing. Fatal Influence will appear, and in a number one contenders match, Andre Chase puts Chase U on the line against Ridge Holland. They could be expelled.
Or the school could be defunded, you know, all the students wouldn't be able to graduate, you know. be awful.
Yeah, I mean, this could be the end of Chase U. That's something you build the whole show around, Chase U. And then Dynamite on Wednesday, Reading, Pennsylvania, will see an all-star eight-man tag with Will Ospreay, Powerhouse Hobbs, Ricochet, and Mark Davis against Konosuke Takeshita, Kyle Fletcher, Lance Archer, and Brian Cage. Darby Allin faces Claudio Castagnoli, Orange Cassidy against Wheeler Yuta, Chris Statlander against Hikaru Shida, and appearances, presumably in matches, with Hechicero, Mascara Dorada, and Atlantis Jr. from CMLL, all leading to the first appearance on Dynamite by Big Boom AJ on the go-home edition of Dynamite heading into Full Gear. But this looks like a very good show on Wednesday night.
I think they usually do, AEW. Again, the roster is so stacked that, like, really, they could hit the randomizer and you'll probably end up
that
with a really
good
card.
That should be the gimmick on Rampage. You literally have a randomizer and you don't know. It's going to be the weirdest matches.
I don't think that's such a bad idea, John. I mean, I guess, like, with the nature of it being a taping, you can kind of tell who hasn't already been there. But, like, not announcing any matches ahead of time for Rampage might at this point be just as fine, you know, of a gimmick as announcing a match.
What if they did shoot random matches? Like, you come out and you literally don't know who your opponent is and you see how they work together.
I would tune in for the mess. And one of them is, like, Big Boom AJ, you know? Versus like Ricochet or something? Yeah.
See, I have no interest in booking wrestling, but give me a program that you have no desire, that has no expectation.
You want Rampage.
Just
want
let me be stupid with a show, and that's what you would get. Okay. So anyway, that's Wednesday. We will be back right after that show and previewing Full Gear. But Tuesday, we've got the Wellness Policy, and it is the return of a familiar topic in Wellness Policy history. We're talking about music. It's Wei Ting's big FU once a year to YouTube. Come flag us, okay? Because Wei is going to get more commercial than ever before.
Ooh, yeah. It appears to be an annual tradition at this point. You know, the Wellness Policy, we've been going on strong for, I feel like, 3 years, maybe more than that. And every year we seem to do a music edition. First time it was with Dan LaMouth Labransky. Last year we had Neil on board, and of course the Post Wrestling Cafe. We're bringing him back this time. And this time, as John kind of alluded to, I'm even going to play music on the show, all right? We don't play licensed music on any of these. I'm gonna tempt my fate here with the YouTube flaggers and bots and everything, and we'll see what happens. So draw, if you have a recommendation, if you have a suggestion, we'll play it on air. Be prepared for Neil to harshly criticize it as a Gen Xer may, and we will just talk about our favorite things that we've been listening to lately. Tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern time, youtube.com/postwrestling.
All right, tune in. Also, this Thursday, it's the last Ask Away mailbag show of the year. So if you want to get your last-minute questions in, go post in the thread. Anyone can post questions. Forum.postwrestling.com. Just get them in by Thursday morning. And you can also send an audio question if you so desire. Free to send in memo.fm/postwrestling. So get it in. Final mailbag show of 2024. And as I told Wei, coming home last night, frigid on my bike. And I was thinking, my God, do I need to invest in a new jacket?
Boy, do you. And boy, do we have just the thing, John, because we're very proud to announce, of course, with our friends at chop-tees.com, the most premium piece of merchandise that we've ever attached to the Post Wrestling name in our 7-year history. This is the very, very limited edition Post Wrestling Varsity Jacket. Ooh. What do you think, John?
I mean, I'm seeing this for the first time. I mean, this is styling. Look at this. I think I would highly recommend checking out this jacket. You were almost going to wear this the other night.
I was, and I'm kind of glad I didn't, because Davey Portman wore his Poison Rana jacket, which you could, of course, also get at Chop Tees, and we would just look like the biggest douches. So if you're going to buy one, make sure that none of your friends are also going to wear it at the same time. But we do recommend you at least check this out. A beautiful green melting wool body, genuine leather sleeves.
Is this Lincoln green?
I've been told that in some circles it may be considered Lincoln green. But genuine leather sleeves, which means it'll last 10 times longer than faux leather. None of that fake shit here, okay?
No.
Quilted inner lining, embroidered post-wrestling logos on the chest and the back. And unlike most of our merch, these are produced and stored ahead of time, which means that they are in extremely limited supply. You can check to see if your size is still available at chop-tees.com/post-wrestling. Again, it's the most premium piece of merch we've ever sold. So what do you think, John, is the cost of a varsity jacket with real leather? What would you pay for one of these?
$900.
Well, if you went to the Roots, okay? Are you familiar with Roots? All right.
Double that. That
you love Roots, right? You're a big Roots fan. One of the, you know, Canadian iconic retailers. They sell theirs for like $600 to $1,000 for one of these things. Us, you're talking genuine leather. You're talking a melt-in wool body. $155 American. All right, John.
To quote the man, get out of town.
I'm about to pack my bags. This is a price that already includes the price of shipping, even, as with all products at Chop Tees. Dickie has also mentioned that all these items can be returned or exchanged if the customer sends it back with the price tag still attached. So don't take it off. Just put it on. If it doesn't fit you, send it back. So again, chop-tees.com/post-wrestling to see if your size is still available, because once these are gone, they are gone forever.
Yes, but if you get one of these jackets, you are post-wrestling for life. Like, you are going to be part of a... I will think more highly of you, even if I have a strong opinion of you. It will be that much higher. I will absolutely grade you higher in my mind if you have one of these jackets.
Wow, okay. That's probably worth more than really any...
I think you anything. And I should get these jackets and do appearances with these jackets.
I've already got mine, yeah. John, you should go order one for yourself.
Okay, well, now that I know the price, I might have to go out and get it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully your size is still there.
Man. I got tickets today to go... This was a very, like, 17-year-old me purchase, but I bought tickets to see Linkin Park next summer.
That's awesome. Wow. The new Linkin Park.
The new Linkin Park, yes.
Oh, cool.
They're playing
that sounds amazing.
Yeah, they're playing at Scotiabank Arena. I was like, I don't know what this concert is going to look like. If it's going to be a lot of I don't know what
it's
it will
probably going to be amazing.
I want to go. My friends want to go, and I was like, I'm in. I'll go.
This. Oh is yeah, fun. Yeah. I just like. I mean, you're at the perfect age, I think, to relive some of your.
I'm going to wear my post wrestling jacket. Okay.
Sure. Yeah. You should wear your flame shoes. Like, you know, like spike tip your hair, grow your hair by then, and then spike tip it, frost it.
That might be the plan. Okay. Linkin Park with Lincoln Green is going to be my wardrobe.
Okay. All right. Summer. That sounds amazing.
I'm going to wear this in the middle of the summer, too. All right. Postwrestling.com is where you can go, and chop-tees.com/postwrestling. Grab your limited edition post-wrestling varsity jacket. Okay. There's nothing JV about chop-tees because they are a select group running things down in Australia.
What's after varsity, I guess? Like a professional?
I mean, most, I think it was varsity is kind of the ceiling.
Okay. All right.
Can't go above it.
Okay.
If we do, if they have a type of leather, we'll find it for our version 2 jacket. Mm-hmm. On to Raw we go. Taped edition of the show, Grand Rapids, Michigan, for the second week in a row. And first segment was the big one because we have Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez out and bring up Jade and Belair, but state, hey, we didn't come alone. So Nia Jax, Tiffany Stratton, and Candice LeRae come out, and Jax explains she doesn't like Raquel, doesn't even think about her, doesn't think about Liv either. Cool, but here she is. And they name drop Belair, Cargill, and Naomi, who proceed to walk out, and they, too, have not come alone as Io Sky comes out. And in typical WWE heel fashion, when it comes to setting up war games, we have to have the heel counting the number discrepancy, as Liv explains that there's 5 of us and 4 of you. What could it mean? And out comes Rhea Ripley with her mask. And she comes out, and man, are we just like intensifying the dramatics when it comes to announcing war games? I mean, it was War Games, and she headbutts Liv, and we have a big brawl, and that is our 5-on-5 match for November 30th.
Well, you need to, John. You need somebody to shout War Games, otherwise it doesn't really feel like it's War Games. Yeah, I mean, this was spoiled for a lot of people, I think, last week, but it's perfectly fine, I think, for a show like this, you know? You want maybe to build up a little bit of hype about Rhea Ripley's return. We didn't get a chance to speak on it last week, but what do you think about her coming back so soon?
I mean, obviously, she's probably working with this injury, but I mean, from a storyline perspective, like this adds arguably your biggest star to this match. There's the natural connection with the Liv program, and like they have set up a lot for Liv Morgan. Like there's the returning Rhea Ripley. There's a pending challenge by Io Sky, and it was brought up the fact that Belair pinned her on television last week as well. Rather than pinning Raquel Rodriguez. So at minimum, like you have got quite a bit lined up for Liv that I think is going to be the kind of focus here. And you also want to spin Nia off with something because she sort of feels like this, like, yes, she has the Tiffany Stratton, Candice lingering stuff, but doesn't really have that big program going on at the moment. So maybe something comes out of this with her. You know, different brands, but you could do something maybe with Raquel and Nia or Jade Cargill and Nia. There's different ways you can go about this.
Yeah, yeah. I like the War Games teams a lot. You know, despite how quickly maybe they were all thrown together, they are still your top five active baby faces on the baby face side of things. And I think that to me is usually enough to justify like a War Games match. Not everything has to have like a long built, you know, 5-on-5 story like the Bloodline story does. What you do need is just like one principal feud to kind of like build everything else around. And you have that in Rhea Ripley versus Liv Morgan. So I definitely think there's enough here for the match to be hot and successful on the night of.
There was a recap of SmackDown with Bronson Reed aligning with the new Bloodline, and more coming later because it will be Bronson Reed against Seth Rollins in the main event. Mixed tag match, Chad Gable and Ivy Nile against Rey Mysterio and Zelina Vega. Joe Tessitore reminding us of that last time that Rey and Zelina had a mixed tag match, that match back in July, if you remember.
No, I don't.
Joe Tessitore does. Okay. Man was big on the dates tonight. He had a whole pile of them. So there's the advantage on Rey, and then he does a head scissors, taking Gable to the floor, and in comes Vega, and Nile gets control after a short arm clothesline. They work through the break, and then Gable grabs Vega, and the crowd is incensed by this, and she hits Gable with an enziguri, tagging Rey. Rey and Gable were great in this, like very Rey just relying on the Kurt Angle pedigree, I think, or the template, I think, with Gable. Mm. And slams him off the shoulders and then crotches Gable, presses Vega over top into a Rana, sending Gable off the turnbuckle. Rey hits the 619 and a slingshot splash and just pins Chad Gable. Very clean, and crowd pop for the ending here. Fun tag, especially when Rey and Gable were in.
I felt like a fan-friendly, almost maybe slightly above house show level type of match with the big babyface win. I do maybe question the booking slightly because I don't know if like the LWO and Rey and Zelina really have that much going on at all in terms of storyline, whereas the Alpha Academy seems to get more promotion, whether it be in those vignettes or like in interactions with the Wyatts. And I don't know what this post-match angle was necessarily supposed to lead to other than just like, you know, a bit of a way to protect themselves in defeat. But I don't know if this match really, the outcome of it was meant to signify anything long term.
The Creeds come in and Gable just starts shoving Brutus and Julius, and he's slapping Julius. And then the brothers start like pushing each other to just rev one another up. And Gable says, "That's what I've been looking for." This is very weird. It's like, you lost, and he's upset with these two. And then they all pose together, and
yeah. Again, questionable booking, because if they were going to focus on the Creeds coming off of this, I would have just maybe had them figure into a win somehow. This just seemed to me like an attempt to, I don't know, save face for American Made. By shoving each other.
Make America Gable again.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going with that one.
No. Judgment Day is in the back, and Liv is upset about Rhea's return. So Balor offers to run things tonight and reminds Dominic how he beat Damian Priest a few weeks ago and gets them prepared for War Raiders and warns about the two of them getting destroyed. And then JD McDonagh has to speak to Finn Balor privately off camera and they leave. And apparently this conversation was, hey, when the War Raiders beat these two, what if we jump them? Finn that must have it. Thought, yeah, that's a good one because we're already here at this arena. We don't have any matches. I think we should stick around and we'll jump them.
So I'm very fat. Like, this is an otherwise, I would say, kind of skippable WWE Raw because of its nature of being a tape show. I think
if you take the Rhea Ripley appearance out, I thought this was a totally it was just a quicksand edition of the show where just everything stayed in place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But for me, what I'm most fascinated by is the construction of the show and seeing, again, because of the nature of SmackDown being live taped afterwards and then having to go back to a taped edition of Raw that was filmed before SmackDown. I'm very curious to see how they weave those puzzle pieces together. Maybe this particular segment where JD tells Balor to go, hey, come, let's talk off to the side. Like, did something get lost in translation there? Did something happen that wasn't like that was supposed to be deeper than what it actually turned into? I don't know.
I will say this, they're doing a much better job than when WCW had to do this with Thunder, where it would be they do a Nitro, then they tape two Thunders, but the second Thunder would be airing after the next week's Nitro. So yeah. Every other week you'd get a Thunder that was just pretty much cold matches. And they didn't even take a stab at like any significant stories and stuff.
Can go wrong, okay? Like, let's say on the SmackDown, like, God forbid, I don't know, like a Bronson Reed got injured or something. Then, like, well, what do you do with this taped edition of Raw afterwards?
Well, when times are tough, you got to be stacking up these tapings. You know what I mean? You gotta cut costs where possible. Like, this is like touch and go.
So they have a few of these coming up, don't they? Like
They're doing a double taping at SmackDown this Friday in Utah. So that'll be Friday's show and the night before Survivor Series show that they're taping. So they'll have to tape SmackDown knowing whatever they're doing on Raw Monday night.
And to your knowledge, like, what do you think is the reason for these extra double tapes?
I don't know what the deal was for this Grand Rapids show last week, but for this Friday, it's because Thanksgiving is the next week, and you're letting your talent not have to travel on Thanksgiving Day to get to the SmackDown city.
Do you think, like, in the case of Raw, that there's anything to maybe the fact that they're making less for these shows, therefore they want to spend less money on, like, having an extra night of production?
It's a totally viable reason, because I don't know of any other reason. They're being paid a lot less here, and you're talking like high six figures or so to stage a night of tapings. So you know, it is some cost savings in being able to do this. And it's not like the ratings going to take a big hit. Like, no. If it is, it's more a function of whatever the Monday Night Football competition is, not live versus taped. The Miz video. It's been an emotional couple of weeks, and they show him being kidnapped by the Wyatts and joining the final testament, calling it the performance of a lifetime. He bled for his art, which was a great utilization of his busted up eye last week, and thinks he deserves an Oscar. And also talks about pitching the Marine 7, Jake Carter Lives, and Martin Scorsese or Quentin Tarantino directing this.
I would watch the hell out of a Quentin Tarantino Marine.
he would. I don't know.
A Scorsese Marine would probably reach like what, 5 hours? Would you?
Oh my God! Yeah, it would. Yeah, and Netflix would still probably agree to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gunther is walking in the back with Ludwig Kaiser and explains why he shut him down last week. He says, you are not to speak for me out there. Kaiser, you need to do better and make a name for yourself. And then he's like mixing in like German with his English and explains, your father, Axel Dieter. And he's like, wait a minute, my last name's Kaiser. Who's this Axel Dieter you speak of? And you need to be your own man. And then Gunther says, look into my eyes. What do you see? And Kaiser said, a cult of personality. And he says, do you see the old ring general? And Kaiser says, of course, nothing has changed. And they smile. I didn't know what the purpose of this was. So then Gunther takes off his jacket, and he spots Damian Priest, apparently at an autograph signing for friends and family here in the back, and goes to choke him. And Priest drops him with a boot after Gunther grabbed a pipe and informs him that you might be the ring general, but on the streets, I'm the king. And Gunther was, like, killed from this boot. I mean, look, he's, like, almost in the fetal position.
Hey, and, man, a boot to the right position, I guess, could...
Oh, yeah, this was, like, this was like Stipe going down on Saturday night from the rib shot. And then Adam Pearce was very concerned, and it led to the punchline, Damian telling him that Gunther needs some ice.
Yeah, really just one of those segments where you could tell that this was maybe the best that they could come up with for a double taping, you know, like not very substantial. For
this guy might have been leaving the arena and they're like, no, we got to do something for next week.
Pretty much, John, you know, like, can you spare 5 minutes, Damian Priest and Gunther, so that we could shoot your segment for next week? Like, that was about as much as this was. I did feel like there was something somewhat substantive here with the Gunther and Kaiser interaction, because I don't know, like, at least I was suspecting that maybe they were teasing some form of like breakup or turn even between the two, but this sort of interaction with between them on this episode seems to suggest it's like more of an amicable sort of like departure, you know, whereas like this was kind of Gunther giving, like, what is it, allowing Kaiser to leave the nest, so to speak, and be his own man, you know, wrestle, go on his own singles journey without having to speak for...
Remember your father!
That's very good.
Sound like Kevin Sullivan yelling, your father! Next up was Braun Breaker and Sheamus for the Intercontinental Championship. Early on, dude, Braun runs the ropes. This dude is so goddamn fast, and he just takes this guy's head off with a clothesline. Sheamus beats him down with a backbreaker, and there's a spot. Breaker climbs to the top, and he hits like a swan dive to the floor, and he's just going straight down before he rotates right at the end. This was it just lands on the ground here, taking down Sheamus. Sheamus comes back with the white noise off the turnbuckle. We're doing numerous near falls. Braun scales up to the top for the Frankensteiner and then runs for the spear, and Sheamus knees him in the face. Another big near fall. Signals for the brogue kick, but instead he is speared, but Sheamus manages to roll to the floor, and Braun is about to run around the ring, and he runs into Kaiser. Ludwig Dieter Jr., who takes him out with a clothesline. The crowd boos this finish, and after attacking Braun, then he hits a running drop kick to Sheamus into the steps, telling Sheamus he won't stop until he's gone for good. This is kind of like babyface Braun Breaker, but you also have a Kaiser like clearly going after the title that Gunther, you know, that this was his big springboard belt, was the IC belt, and it seems, you know, something involving the three of them. I don't know how long Breaker is going to stay as a heel. I just see that's going to be very tough. And this one, they just opened the door for the audience to have sympathy rather than Kaiser just attacking Sheamus, which would have been like the heat.
Well, if you remember when he initially lost the belt to Jay, I mean, that was, he was clearly flirting with a babyface turn. This might have just put him back on track.
The interaction with Gunther that has never been picked up on outside of that 1 week where he confronted him.
Yeah, clearly plans changed, or at least I suspect plans might have changed at some point, but we are getting, I think Kaiser taking a big step up on this particular episode, being clearly inserted into the IC title level scene is the correct next step for him. I like the fact that they were somehow able to transition his feud with Sheamus into it, so now Sheamus also has, you know, sort of a target in this, like, ever-elusive IC championship, and they're good at building these sort of three-way feuds, and I hope this one is a bit more compact than maybe Andrade and Carmelo.
Yeah. What if Braun beats both of these guys as they're having a best of seven series to get an IC title shot, and then at the end beats them again?
Well, let's hope not.
Did wonders for those two. Very good match though up until the ending. But I mean, you opened it up with a new direction, and you know keeps Sheamus tied to Braun Breaker. But it was a very good match.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Rollins meets up with the Usos and Sami Zayn, and they're still pitching this guy to join them for War Games. Zayn reminds him, "You did this a year ago. You joined Cody, you hypocrite." Rollins says, "I would stand up next to either three of you, but not Roman Reigns, that tyrant. It's not worth it to put Reigns back into power, but I'm going to help us all by taking out Bronson Reed tonight so he can't make it to War Games."
Mm-hmm. I think Rollins has been really good in these segments, you know, while he's being courted to join the Bloodline. I think the conviction of how much he hates Roman Reigns really comes across. I do think it's fascinating how, like, he's seemingly willing to forgive. I mean, he's already forgiven Jay. He's even willing to forgive Jimmy. But something about Roman, we can assume that it's because of their long history together as part of the Shield, has, like, irked him so much that he will never, ever, ever even consider it. So they have how much time, John? Like, let's see.
No, next week's the last the last show.
How much convincing can they do of Seth Rollins for him to turn around from his position right now into, okay, I'll join you?
I lied. We had a bunch of video packages on the show. We had the Miz kidnapping recap, and now we go to Dakota Kai discussing her return and being out for 4 months and battling a lot of self-doubt, whether the people would care when she returns, and asking herself if she's good enough. And I've never wanted this more. I'm ready to show why Dakota Kai is a champion.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe we should be thankful that, like, this being a tape show allowed them more time to create videos like this. I didn't really buy this one so much from Dakota Kai. I mean, I think maybe it just needed a little bit more than just, at this point, what felt like a bit of a cliche. I was injured, I lost self-doubt, and now I'm back. You know, we kind of needed a bit more, especially for her being a babyface, where this goes for all of Damage Control. We never really had much of a reason why they turned babyface. For her now, you know, like, I get no feeling that she's a genuine babyface other than the fact that her friends are also babyfaces or not. So now I'm a good guy and you should like me too.
So for all the discussion about entrance music in WWE, it's taken quite a bashing from many people. But if we also take attention to various wrestlers' logos, way is that mm-hmm. an underreported aspect of WWE presentations? And what do you think about this logo coming off what we saw over the weekend, the reveal of the Raw logo for Netflix as well?
Yeah, they seem to love, like, playing. Oh, well, I think it's this, like, one.
Why use two letters twice when we can just use it for both?
Yeah, the WWE Raw logo, I think, maybe deserves its own conversation here.
I misspoke. This is a WWE Baw. Maybe Kid Rock is going to be doing the theme instead of Travis Scott.
Okay, for all the complaining that that I heard about the SmackDown logo, I mean, how long did it take all of us to get used to it? It's fine.
None of these really matter. I think we're just ingrained to.
This one looks like a bit like a ninja star. You know, we'll probably make fun of it for, I don't know, the first week. But
it just looks like this R that just never ends. I mean, it's
right.
It's and then the A. It feels like the A just got no discernible characteristics to it. But that's it. Dominic Mysterio. It's a tape show, folks. I'm trying here. Dominic Mysterio and Carlito against the War Raiders. War Raiders are the number one contenders for the tag titles. Eric uses Ivar to scoop slam him onto Carlito. Dominic comes in with a suicide dive, and then Ivar starts chanting, "War, war, war," and goes and hits kind of his version of a Bronco Buster. It's like a seated senton into the corner onto Dom. And then Ivar sends Dominic running into Carlito, who loses his apple. And then Dominic is sent out of the ring as they hit the War Machine on Carlito. The War Raiders hit the War Machine on Carlito to win. And that was that. But then Finn Balor and JD McDonagh jump them from behind. Their plan worked. And they go after the neck of Eric, we are told. And Balor hits a coup de grace and Judgment Day stand tall above the War Raiders.
I just realized on this episode, no Valhalla now with the War Raiders.
She hasn't been there since they've come back.
I don't think so, yeah.
No.
So, okay. Yeah, so interesting. Good outing, I would say, overall for the War Raiders. You don't... I maybe... It's hard to tell how much of these crowd reactions are genuine on this tape show, but from just my perception, the crowd seemed to respond well to them. So still having to fight out of this deficit of, like, you know, everything that they've done to this team since they've been on the main roster. But I think the crowd might be ready to give them a chance, especially against Balor and JD, that, you know, depending, like making them vulnerable with a neck issue. And I guess they both have broken necks. Is that it? They both have neck injuries. Is that right?
It was, yeah. I mean, you had Ray Rowe with the motorcycle accident like 10 years ago, and then Ivar recently with the neck injury that he nearly had to retire from.
Okay, well, there you go. So, yeah, I think that's a good little storyline in order to at least give them some identifying character, because we haven't really had much since.
The Wyatts got their response with, we saw footage of Miz being kidnapped where they had written liar across his chest. And then we hear from Bo Dallas, who says that the trust of the innocent is a liar's most useful tool. He offered him salvation. He keeps referring to him. We're led to believe this is Miz he's referring to, but he calls him him. And freedom from the pit. And he tried to warn him. He is sorry for what happens next. You chose this, and you will lose what matters the most. I never wanted this.
So are we getting another home invasion?
All I'm saying is that if these are the baby faces, I am so rooting for The Miz to just destroy these five and send them to prison.
Yeah, but these guys look cooler, okay? No?
Yeah, no, I don't know.
The videos
about this
look
one.
Cooler.
Yeah. Okay. The production is very, very high level.
Yeah. So what's the big threat here? What are we going to get? What's going to happen to The Miz? More could they do to this man? Okay. Like, these people are already responsible for what? Invading their home in, what is it? Dexter Lumis. He's done that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This is a repeat offender.
What is it? They kidnapped him, drew liar on his face. What else could they do to this poor guy?
I don't know. These are just these are criminals.
Yeah, but they look so cool. They sell a lot of merch.
Well, in that case, you will be able to evade the law. Then there was a video for Lyra Valkyria, and she explains that a phoenix has to burn first so it can rise. She was sent into the fire, coming on to Raw. But she didn't burn. She thrived. And I see much more than just a phoenix. I'm Lyra Valkyria. I don't burn. I rise. And I'm coming for everyone. I am just repeating what she said.
It's funny coming from you. It's funny for me to think about, like, John having to write these words, and even funnier with him having to announce it and broadcast it to the world.
All this was words coming out of her mouth in order. Because yeah. I don't know what this message was. Like, she's just talking in riddles here.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, listen, her gimmick is that, I guess, she's like a bird, like a mythical bird. And I don't know if that's a lot for somebody to work with here. You know, they have to craft so much around that identity.
Everything has to, you know, she's got to be like Nelly Furtado here at her core. That's,
sure, yeah.
Like, she's really...
listen, like, she came in with the spark. They booked her strong, like, heading into the
Queen of the Ring. A spark that did not burn.
You're right, yes. They booked her strong heading into the Queen of the Ring tournament. They had a little thing with Becky, but since then, they just kind of completely dropped her. And I mean, if she caught fire, maybe that wouldn't have happened. So let's see if she will this time.
Maxine and Alpha Academy, who are still on these programs, are walking backstage, and they run into Kofi Kingston. We're excited about New Day's anniversary. It's like, when is this anniversary?
Didn't they say at the end of November?
They said the end of November. Next week is the end of November.
Yeah, that next week is the last episode of Raw in November. So
they did not promote an anniversary celebration. Instead, Xavier Woods walks in and talks to Kofi about how they've been arguing and says that I keep going back to what Karrion Kross said, that the New Day is dead. We're the only ones that don't know it. And Kofi pushes back at this. And then Otis interjects. So Woods gets upset at Otis, says, we're a real tag team. Why do you think Chad Gable left your asses? And issues a challenge to them for next week, calling Otis and Tozawa clowns. Mm-hmm. I was waiting for Tozawa to say ninja. Ninja.
Yeah. I mean, if that was the New Day's 10th anniversary match, you know, the New Day versus Alpha Academy. I don't know. That doesn't feel very 10th anniversary.
You know? Maybe the anniversary got pushed to a new day.
Very good.
It's now December.
Seriously though, like the
I know they stated November. They had stated November. That was what they were promoting, and I don't know.
What exactly are we going by though? What is the first day that they're
I don't know, because they did vignettes. They showed up in November or December. It could have been December for all I know. I'm not looking that one up. But that's next week, along with Nia Jax and Bianca Belair in the advantage match.
In this, at least, the New Day made their in-ring debut on the November 28th edition of SmackDown.
Oh, that was their in-ring. Okay, so that followed all the vignettes. So those had been airing prior.
Yeah. This was 2014. So November 28th would be technically their in the 10th anniversary.
It would almost be debut. Yeah, next week's the 25th. Like you're almost that's as close.
So it would
as
have to be next week. So like if they're doing this,
they don't have to honor the date. They could do it whenever they want. They could do it in March.
Do we get a breakup on the 10th anniversary whenever they choose to celebrate it?
I think you're going to get Big E on the anniversary, and maybe mm-hmm. that is the time to do the breakup. I do feel the idea of them like setting aside their differences. Like you've either got to have these two win the tag titles together or break them up. It's like you got to do one of the extremes. And yeah. I think more people are interested in seeing this kind of fracture.
Yeah, I would say I am too. But listen, when you break them up, I guess you could put them back together eventually. They are one of those teams, though, like they've waited this long. Not many teams can say that they've stuck around together for 10 years and haven't broken up, but they've kind of kept to it. We'll see. We'll see when they choose
to celebrate.
All
be centered around Woods and mm-hmm. the idea that, you know, this the other two, they've won their world championships. This is Woods. Like, this breakup is all about emphasizing Woods for a singles run.
Yeah. Mm.
Bronson Reed and Seth Rollins closes the show. Right at the beginning, the new Bloodline hop the barricade and surround the ring when the Usos and Zayn arrive, and Aldis and Pierce, they just throw their hands in the air. They're like, F it. Rollins, so they fight them all outside, out of the ring, and we're left to Rollins and Reed to have a match here. Rollins gets thrown into the timekeeper's area, and then Rollins starts ramming Bronson's head into the steps, and he goes for a stomp. Reed avoids that, and then we go through two commercial breaks, and Rollins is continually trying to get the pedigree. On the third attempt, he finally gets it, and we got a near fall off of a frog splash. We had the pedigree connect and Reed kicking out of that, and then he hits the stomp, climbs up to the top for a follow-up frog splash when Solo Sikoa appears on the desk, and Seth Rollins is just fixated on Solo Sikoa, and the distraction leads to a Death Valley driver, a pair of sentons, and the dreaded tsunami, which Joe Tessitore reminds us takes us all back to July 6th. Yes. I think that's the date when Bronson Reed delivered his litany of tsunamis, which have impacted Seth's year. And Bronson Reed wins the match, so it is one apiece in this feud and ends with Seth down and never say never, Seth, even though you said it last week.
Right. Yeah. So one apiece, I mean, justifies the booking that we just saw at Crown Jewel and sets them up for this War Games match and then a match beyond this, you know, with Reed and Rollins. I like the match a lot. I think these two have terrific chemistry together. And this one I thought was very good, especially for a TV match. And overall, I thought it was like a smart crafting of stories in this episode leading from SmackDown. I mean, giving us the Solo and Rollins interaction in the parking lot last week allowed this scene to make sense to a live crowd that saw it without having seen SmackDown. But it does take new meaning after the SmackDown reveal of of Bronson Reed officially joining the War Games team. So I am like as impressed by all of that coordination as I am with the match.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of just kept a lot of things in place, minus the Rhea Ripley story, which was, you know, the formation of the women's team. So we have our two War Games matches, Damian Priest against Gunther, and then filling out the rest of the card. But that alone is a sizable portion of the show right there between the two War Games matches and what you expect to be a lengthier title match.
It's very much like, you know, the Royal Rumble, in that it's the gimmick that kind of really sells the show, and knowing what the matches are, knowing who the participants are at this point, I think already makes the show a very attractive one. You add in there some of the other matches that you who else, what else we got?
Well, the big thing is, I can't imagine Cody not being on this show, and I guess the only question is, do you go to Cody and Kevin Owens? That seems like the only reasonable match to make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So between those four, maybe one other.
Yeah, you've set up the stuff like this tag title match, but that could easily be TV. Like this, probably you get your five or six matches on this show.
Does the New Day get a match? Perhaps like that would be closer to the anniversary if they wanted to.
You could squeeze it in before the end of November. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
Imagine if Kofi gets them a match, but it gets bumped to the pre-show, and that's it for Xavier Woods. Ouch. They get bumped to the pre-show. That could be it. All right. Well, there you go. Not the most captivating Raw, but Breaker and Sheamus and Rollins and Seth were enjoyable matches. And if you stayed offline throughout the week, you would have been getting Rhea Ripley's, well, very expected return.
Yeah.
Let's go to forum.postwrestling.com.
We have a number of super chats.
All right. Well, answer. Let the gates open.
Yeah. Thank you guys for watching us live at youtube.com/postwrestling right after WWE Raw. Let's go to Karthik, who sends 100 rupees to say, I'm surprised Punk didn't do better with retirees in the Hall of Fame. His approach to matches, angles, and feuds is very old school and inspired by vintage US wrestling. He is, of course, referring to the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. We haven't really had a chance to hear your thoughts on this year's class.
Well, I'm going to do a show on the cafe on Tuesday, and I'm going to go through the ballot, who got in, who didn't get out, and or who did not get in. So I'll go into it in more depth. But that's going to come out Tuesday on the Post Wrestling Cafe for all members. But just on CM Punk, I mean, I've laid out my case. I've voted for Punk. I think he's going to get in. It's not as though he has been blown out, and like a John Moxley has so much more ground to make up. Like he is way below the threshold, but Punk is within distance. And I think a lot of the people in the US Canadian, like modern stars category, there's a lot of interesting candidates and a bunch of them got in this year. So that's going to give voters that many more people to make picks on. And I think you're going to get enough that Punk will get over the line unless there is something, you know, catastrophic that harms his case. But I think those that already view Punk in a negative light, they're not voting for him regardless. But I think that's going to be overtaken by people that just, they look at the case of this guy that has been he's been a very big difference maker in a sizable portion of his career, like all-time great talker, someone that has been that's ascended to become a main event performer that is drawn in many different promotions, that was the catalyst for AEW's peak. You have the AEW arguments against him. Someone that I think doesn't get enough credit for kind of leaving WWE, but how his kind of approach to things was a lot of the DNA of early NXT and Paul Levesque's, you know, eventual coming around to, you know, talent that he saw as being able to fit in his WWE system. I think a lot of it was off, you know, CM Punk as a prototype of someone that could come and be labeled as this indie guy. And you could see guys that could come out and could be a very versatile player, to a degree, Bryan Danielson as well. But I think Punk really did inform that those early NXT years, and you know, coming back this past year, you have to look at it as this has been a positive this year for Punk as we come up on Survivor Series. Like, there has not been, granted he was hurt, but still had a lot of big contributions. And by next year, like, you may have that Mania, that big Mania program that might put him over the top. So we will see.
Thank you very much for that super chat, Karthik. Let's go to Jake from the Windy City, who sends $5. Do you see the traditional Survivor Series elimination match returning anytime soon, or is it played out at this point? I do think War Games does add freshness.
I think you go one or the other, and I was never a big fan of the elimination concept. I think it just kind of waters down the show to have both gimmicks on one show.
I think it's a great gimmick for a TV match, which I feel like they might have done in previous years. Like, if the SmackDown leading into Survivor Series, for instance, I think is a great place to maybe build something like that up. I think it's a great gimmick for NXT to adopt, you know? Like, they kind of, at that point, would have swapped gimmicks, you know? WWE main roster takes War Games, and NXT can have the traditional Survivor Series match. I think having both on the same pay-per-view, especially now when you only have traditionally, what, like, 5-6 matches per PLE, I think that's a bit too much, especially given just, like, their kind of inverse matches of each other, you know, both requiring multi-man teams in elimination style, the other one requiring multi-man teams as you continue to add. So I don't think they belong on the same show, but there's a lot of wrestling content that they have to fill, and I think one of those shows they'll find a place for it. Thank you very much for that, Jake. Let's go to Evan, who sends $5 to say, Rahm Emanuel, the brother of Ari, is in the running for the new DNC chair. So let's congratulate the real winners of the election, TKO. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, there you have it. Ari Emanuel will have his connections to both sides. Did you see any of the appearances at UFC 309?
I did not, no.
Yeah, I mean, it's so embedded into these UFC shows that I'm almost just immune to it. But I mean, for Saturday, everyone knew, like, Donald Trump was arriving, and then he came with who is there? Elon Musk was there, RFK Jr., Tulsi Gabbard, both Don Jr. and Eric Trump were there. Like, they're all coming in, and of course, like, the arena goes insane for them coming in. I will state this. Listen, this is not like I don't enjoy these on the UFC broadcast, but if your argument is that like, you're upsetting the fans, I'm sure there's plenty of fans that I know that there are plenty of fans that really hate this about the UFC product. But that this arena, like, they went nuts for this guy. Like, they're just enamored. And then they play this, like, conquering hero video feature on the big screen of him defeating Kamala Harris, and they've got, like, the big number 47 at the end. I mean, there was no fighter that received this level of treatment. I would include John Jones here. And then you have all the fighters that are just, like, just fawning over him as well. I mean, it was just, it's a lot for some people. And I mean, not lost on people that it was only 3 years ago that, you know, Dana White was so adamant that it's like, no one tunes into a UFC broadcast to hear about people's politics. Like, we are a break from all of that. It's not the case now. It's like, that's obviously shifted, but you also can't dismiss the fact that there is a large amount of fight fans that, like, this really does, this caters to them, and that's going to turn off people as well. But this is part of the UFC product now. Like, they are an extension of this administration.
And as far as, like, what I suspect Ari Emanuel might feel about this, I bet you he loves seeing the amount of money that's rolling in as a result of, like, this promotion that he owns now, essentially kind of being, like, the default sport of this political party and this political movement. I mean, how many sports can ask for that? I don't think he cares much about, you know, other ramifications beyond just how much money he's able to make off of it.
It's access to power and it's access to influence. And those are very, very, you know, coveted things. But this was, this was, I would say, the most significant of these, like, of the political spotlight in terms of just, like, a Like this was a promotional effort and did feel like a Republican rally for the final like 5-10 minutes of the early prelims. And then throughout the pay-per-view, like you had him right there octagon side for the whole night.
Yeah, it continues to be fascinating to me how little WWE seems to be influenced by that. You know, WWE has seemingly continued to remain apolitical outside of, I guess, the appearance of Stephanie and Triple H here. But even that, I don't know if it was even necessarily so overt. You know?
Like there was footage way of like Paul Levesque going up and shaking Trump's hand. And like you would think in like most businesses, like that's a photo op that you would be. Like, especially now where everyone wants to be in Trump's orbit of, you know, major businesses and congratulating him publicly. Like, WWE is not, you know, taking a photo. It's like in WWE is never shy when it comes to like this kind of stuff. But it's not as though they put a spotlight on that either of like, here is our major executive next to Trump shaking hands and speaking with the president.
Yeah, it tells me that like WWE still feels very sensitive, or maybe they sense that their audience is very sensitive to these things in ways that are very different from an MMA core audience.
All right, we have a piece of feedback here from Muggin, who writes in, a decent episode tonight that pushed things forward. Rollins and Reed was another good match, albeit a step below from their first match. The women's War Games got set up with Rio's return. I can't lie, this feels thrown together hastily, and it's nothing but a stopgap for Ripley Morgan. Seth refusing to help the OG bloodline just as much as Roman refuses to confront his deep-seated trauma head on. Somehow, those two need to meet each other halfway. Can a resolution be met? Can they meet in the middle way?
I would think that they will. Yeah, before Survivor Series. Yeah, yeah, I mean, it does definitely feel like the women's War Games feel thrown together hastily, I suppose. But I think War Games often are. Like, they're often just
We talk about the men's one. I mean, we thought like the whole like build, like how quickly is Sami Zayn just like he's just part of this group, and that was like that was kind of like hastily put together of like Zayn taking all these like 18 months of resistance from the bloodline, and we're moving on to the next capture in Seth Rollins now in the same role that Zayn was in several weeks ago. So you've had to kind of rush through this to get to your 5-on-5.
My bare minimum is that these feel like they're an all-star game of sorts. If they don't have like more sort of narrative structure bonding them together, like if you're giving me the top stars of a roster with some loose story between them and members of the other team, that's kind of enough for me. But it's obviously better if you have like an overarching story that's been years built up, you know.
All right. Well, that is coming up. Survivor Series is a week from Saturday, and this weekend is Full Gear. So we will preview that on Wednesday's show after Dynamite. So a whole slate of shows this week. The Wellness Policy, again, Tuesday at 1 Eastern here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. Wednesday, Pollock and Thurston at 1 Eastern, followed by Rewind to Dynamite. And then the final Ask Away mailbag of 2024, dropping on Thursday. Get your questions in at forum.postwrestling.com or memo.fm/postwrestling. And if you've got 5+ hours free, the NWA podcast, the most anticipated voice, Chris Ely, post-election analysis, did not disappoint. Great discussion from Nate, Andrew, Chris, and Two-Way Ray. And I am about 90 minutes in, so I've got a sizable amount still to navigate. But that's what the NWA podcast is. It's a giant meal that you get to work on for 4 weeks until they're ready to clear the table once a month.
Yeah, also a lot of discussion about Full Gear and Survivor Series from those guys as well. So do check that out, whether it be on the YouTube or in your podcast app.
All right, check all of it out at postwrestling.com. You can support the site at postwrestlingcafe.com. Multiple bonus shows per week. Ad-free editions of Rewind to Raw and Rewind to Dynamite. Minus jacket discussion. Everyone's going to get that. But you can go on over there as well for $6 a month. What a deal. What a deal. We bring you Real Leather, Lincoln Green, and many bonus shows each and every week. I'll chat about the Observer Hall of Fame tomorrow on the cafe, so you can look out for that. And that's all. I'm out of words, so I will say goodnight.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
The changing of seasons can affect how you feel. 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.